Okay, so tonight I want to focus on, with Purim around the corner, the mitzvah of mishloach manos, which means sending portions. So, for those who know, there's actually four different mitzvos of Purim, right? There's we read the Megillah, the story of, you know, how the Jews were saved over the story of Purim. We have matanos le'avyonim, where we give money to poor people. We have mishloach manos, where we send gifts to our friends. And finally, we have the Seuda of Purim, where we have the festive meal at Purim. You know, it's not a Jewish holiday, unless I think they have the slogan, "They tried to kill us, we survived, now let's eat." So Purim is definitely a great example of that. So I want to focus tonight on one of the four mitzvos, which is the mitzvah of mishloach manos, sending gifts to poor people. So if we already look at the psukim in the Megillah, so if you look at source number one, Esther, Perek Tes, Psukim Yudches and Yutes, so it describes how the Jewish people joins together in Shushan, not only on the 13th, which the whole kingdom did, but also on the 14th, and they rest on the 15th, and they make a commemoration that it should be days of feasting and happiness. And then finally, in Pasuk Yutes, it says that for generations, the walled cities are going to make the 14th days of Simcha, Mishtav, Yom Tov, u'mishloach manos ish l're'eyu, and sending of portions one to another. So we know that we have some type of mitzvah to send portions from one person to the next. And the Gemara describes in source number two, Tani Rav Yosef, u'mishloach manos ish l're'eyu, shtei manos l'ish echad. So each person has the obligation to send two gifts to one person. Two gifts to one person. Counter to contrary belief, they do not need to actually have different blessings, but they need to be two different items, two portions to one person. That is the obligation. So I want to address tonight and try and understand what exactly is the basis for this mitzvah. What is the mitzvah trying to accomplish? What is the purpose of the mitzvah? So in order to understand that, I want to take a step back and ask three questions which might challenge our assumption about what the mitzvah might be about, and then to come up with a new answer and perspective on the mitzvah, which hopefully will answer our three questions, and then also inform and have certain ramifications on the way that we do the mitzvah. Okay, so the first question is, and all the examples of the Gemara are, and I made a joke about it a minute ago, are food, right? Food, wine, etc. So the Trumas Hadeshen, whose name was Rav Yisrael Iserlin, so in source number three, he was born in Germany. He lived in the late 1300s, early 1400s. He is actually very impactful in the world of halacha, where his responsa are going to be quoted by Rav Yosef Cairo in the Shulchan Aruch for Sephardim, for Sephardi Jews, and also by the Ramah for Ashkenazi Jews. So he's a very impactful voice in the world of halacha. And he has a very basic question. There's a whole discussion whether his questions were actual questions or he just thought of those questions as a writing style. But the Trumas Hadeshen asked the question that, let's say, you know, people don't want to send, you know, normally when we think of mishloach manos, we think of the gifts that we give on Purim. It's almost always food, drinks, etc. But let's say people want, instead of food, they want to send sheets or clothes. Can they fulfill the mitzvah of mishloach manos in a way of sending clothes? So the Trumas Hadeshen says no. And he has two reasons as to why not. And I want to read the first line, to so where it says over here, Tshuva, Yira de'ein yotzim behen. You cannot fulfill your obligation of the mishloach manos. If I would send, you know, a nice dress or a nice coat to someone, I would not fulfill my obligation of mishloach manos. Why? The nira tam de mishloach manos hu kedei she lekol echad dai v'safik l'kayim hasuda kedina. What is the purpose of mishloach manos? What are we trying to accomplish? And this is going to be our first perspective. We are trying to basically supply the needs for the Purim meal. We're going to have a big Purim meal. Not everyone could afford such a Purim meal. And therefore, we have a mitzvah of mishloach manos to give gifts to our fellow friend in order to supply them and provide them with food for their meal. And therefore, if I give clothes or sheets or etc., so does that supply you for your meal, provide you for the meal? You know, I haven't tried to eat a coat in the last couple of weeks, but I imagine it's not quite tasty. So therefore, if the whole purpose of Mishloach Manos is to provide you for your meal, to provide your friend with for their meal, so therefore you cannot fulfill your obligation via giving clothes. And number two, as he says, what is manos? When we say mishloach, mishloach means to send. What are manos? He wants to argue that manos refer to things that you eat or things that you drink. And therefore, it must be that mishloach manos, can you fulfill your obligation via clothes? No, because the whole mitzvah of mishloach manos is to help the other person prepare for the suda in a non-embarrassing way. We're not going to ask everyone, you know, can you afford the suda, can you not? So we just do across the board, have everyone give gifts to other people, and therefore people will have their food for them provided. So that's perspective number one. And that's going to be the perspective of the mitzvah, that the mitzvah is to supply your friend, your fellow Jew, with a meal. However, there seems to be a problem, and that not all four sources seem to fit with this perspective. So, for example, in source number four, the Manos Halevi. So who was the Manos Halevi? His name was Rav Shlomo Akavetz. He was born in Greece in the 1500s. He's buried actually in Tzfat. Some people have been to his kever if they went to visit Israel and they went to the holy city of Tzfat. The most famous thing that Rav Shlomo Akavetz is famous for is not for the Sefer, which I'll get back to in a second, but it's actually for composing a tune that we all sing every week. Anyone know? Licha Dodi, right? Licha Dodi. So if you notice that it spells out Shlomo Halevi because it's going to be for Rav Shlomo Akavetz, who wrote the tune that we sing on Friday night in Kabbalah Shabbos when we greet the Shabbos. So he wrote not only Licha Dodi, but he actually wrote a commentary on the Megillah. So in his introduction to the commentary of the Megillah, he's giving, you know, what do you got to do in any commentary to your book or any thing you publish? You got to do a lot of thank yous. So one of the thank yous is, you know, he was newly married. So he's kissing up to his father-in-law. He's singing his father-in-law's praises. And in the end of the line of source number four, he says that actually he gave this new book that he published to his father-in-law as a way of accomplishing Mishloach Manos on Purim. So he thought that he could send his new sefer that he was publishing to his father-in-law and discharge his obligation of Mishloach Manos. So this seems to be, you know, disputing the Trumas Hadeshin. The Trumas Hadeshin thought Mishloach Manos is about providing your fellow Jew with food for the meal, but you can't eat a book the same way you can't eat clothes. So what perspective is the Manos Halevi taking, right? And that's why he says it's called the Manos Halevi. Again, he was a Levite. So he Manos is the gift. So this was a gift that he gave, the Levi gave, to his father-in-law on Purim, this new sefer that he wrote. So our first question is, how could Rav Shlomo Akavetz accomplish Shalach Manos via sending his new book and commentary on Megillas Esther to his father-in-law? I thought the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is preparing and helping provide food for your fellow friend. So that's question number one that we want to ask. It must be that he's taking a different perspective as to what the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is. So let's table question number one. Again, we're going to ask three questions and try and emerge with a new perspective. Question number two, turning on to page two of the source sheets, is the Ramah. So the Ramah is Rav Moshe Islis. So he's also in the 1500s, but instead of being in Greece, he's in Krakow, Poland. Anyone who's been able to have the opportunity to go to Poland on someone was talking about before, Holocaust trips, I highly recommend it. But a lot of the gap year programs in Israel will take people for a week to visit all the concentration camps, etc. But one of the most common places to spend Shabbos for that Shabbos is in the hotel in Krakow. and you're able to go to the shul of Rav Moshe Isserles. And Rav Moshe Isserles is most famous for his commentary that he did, that he wrote on the Shulchan Aruch. Again, Rav Yosef Karo, who Yosef Karo wrote a halachic book called the Shulchan Aruch, which is so impactful and transformational for the world of Sephardi Jewry. And the Ramah thought that it was important that you also have an Ashkenazic voice, so Ashkenazi Pesach will often follow the Ramah. So the Ramah in source number 5 has a very interesting case. He says, "V'im sholeach manos l're'eyu, v'hu ino rotza l'kablam omochulo." So let's say I send, you know, I go to my friend Bob, and I say, "Bob, I have amazing mishloach manos," and he says, "Don't worry, I'm good." And he doesn't end up taking the mishloach manos. He doesn't take the gift. So have I discharged my obligation? Have I fulfilled my obligation of mishloach manos or not? Because Bob did not take it from me. I offered it to Bob, but Bob did not take it to me. So the Ramah says, in such a case, yatza. You have actually fulfilled your obligation. You have fulfilled your obligation of mishloach manos. So it seems to be quite strange. So if you look at source number 6, the Pri Chadash, whose name is Rav Chizkiah di Silva, who's born in the 1600s in Italy. Again, he's a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. He's much more of the Sephardi worldview. So he's like, Tema de minayin zem minayin lo. Where did the Ramah get this idea from? It doesn't make any sense. And the Mishnah Berurah in source number 7, again, the Chafetz Chaim, who lived in the 20th century. So he says that the Pri Chadash is arguing on the Ramah. The Pri Chadash thinks that you are not Yotze. You have not fulfilled your obligation of Mishloach Manos if the person says, I don't need your Mishloach Manos. So we have a dispute in a case where I go to Bob and say, here's Mishloach Manos. And Bob says, no, thank you, I'm okay. Not because he doesn't like you, but just because I don't need it. So the Ramah thinks you have discharged your obligation, you fulfilled your obligation, you do not need to give another Mishloach Manos. However, the Pri Chadash thinks, no, you have not fulfilled your obligation, and therefore you're going to have to give Mishloach Manos to another person. And the obvious question is why? What is this dispute about? So the Pri Chadash makes a lot of sense. Namely, if we take the perspective that we saw before from the Trumas Hadeshet, that the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is to provide food for the meal for your fellow Jew. So have you provided food for your fellow Jew? If he doesn't accept your food? No, right? You have not given food for the Suda. So obviously, if I have not given food for the meal, so how can I fulfill my obligation of Mishloach Manos? But for the Ramah thinks you have fulfilled your obligation. So what could be behind the Ramah's opinion who thinks that even when you don't actually end up giving the Mishloach Manos, you can fulfill your obligation? So let's just review where we are. We have perspective number one on the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is the Trumas Hadeshen, that it's about preparing and providing your fellow Jew with a meal for Purim. And that will explain why you can't fulfill your obligation with clothes. And that's going to explain why even if the person says no, you have not fulfilled your obligation. But for the other two, we have two questions. Namely, why did Rav Shlomo HaKabetz think that he could give Mishloach Manos via a sefer, via his book that he wrote? And number two is, how can the Ramah think that if the person says, I'm okay, I don't need your Mishloach Manos, that you have actually fulfilled your obligation? That is question number two. Question number three is even more is an opinion that is even more shocking and astonishing. So question number three here's has the case of, let's say, you know, I don't know who here, if anyone has like a Purim meal, but let's say one of us has another meal, has a meal where we invite friends. It's always good to invite friends, especially to, maybe there's a special idea of doing so on Purim, as we'll get back to in a minute. But let's say, you know, sometimes you have different meals, and certain meals are what we like to call potluck. Right? You know, I'll make the roast, you make the soup, you'll make the challah, and everyone will provide. But let's say that's not the case. The case is where the host provides all the food and there's guests in attendance. Have the guests fulfilled their obligation of Mishloach Manos? They did not make a single thing for the meal, but have they fulfilled their obligation of Mishloach Manos? So the Magen Avraham in source number 8 says he actually thinks, yes, they have fulfilled their mitzvahs of Mishloach Manos. And he argues that Rashi thinks that that is the case. Again, we're not going to get into the whole Gemara on Dav Zayin Mabez and the way that Rashi understands it. The Magen Avraham ends up concluding that it's better to be stringent and not rely on this opinion. But he thinks that fundamentally, you can fulfill your obligation of Mishloach Manos by just attending someone else's festive meal on Purim. And that's bizarre. How on earth is that possible? We started with, there's the mitzvah of giving gifts. If you haven't given a gift, you haven't even made the food, so how could you fulfill your obligation of Mishloach Manos? It doesn't make any sense. So we have three questions. How can you fulfill Mishloach Manos? How can you fulfill Mishloach Manos by giving away a book? Number two, how can you fulfill Mishloach Manos if the person says no? And says no to your gift. So you haven't given anything. You didn't provide for his meal. And three, obviously you haven't provided for the meal if you're just in attendance for the meal. So how, according to the Magen Avraham, could you possibly think that you fulfilled your obligation? Everyone understand the three questions? Great. Okay. So I want to develop an idea, which is that the Trumas Hadeshen has one perspective on the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. Namely, that the Trumas Hadeshen assumes that Mishloach Manos is about providing a meal for your fellow Jew. However, there's another perspective which emerges, which is really the opinion of Rav Shlomo HaKabetz, who we quoted before in the Model Talevi. But you have to go back in the Megillah to fully appreciate and understand a core idea of Purim, maybe more so than on other holidays. That perhaps Purim, more than other holidays, there's a special theme of Jewish unity, which is obviously so important in a time like what we're living right now. So let's take a step back for a second, and let's go to the Megillah. So if we look at source number 9, we're on the bottom of page number 2. So Haman, we have to go back to Perek Gimel. So Haman, you know, Mordechai refuses to bow to Haman. Haman does, you know, decides he doesn't want to just take it out on Mordechai, he wants to take it out on all the Jews, and he has this brilliant plan. He's going to go to the king, to Ahasuerus, and say, hey, let's kill the Jews. And try and get Ahasuerus to sign off on it. Again, Ahasuerus ends up giving him the ring, etc. So what is Haman's claim about the Jews? So if you look at Pasuk Ches, Vayomer Haman lemelech Ahasuerus, Haman said to King Ahasuerus, Yeshnu am echad mifuzar umifurad bein hamim b'chol medinos malchusecha. There's one nation that's scattered and spread out amongst all the nations in all your kingdom. And they have different laws than every other nation. So they're spread out, they're scattered, their laws are different. They don't follow the laws of the king. It's not worth it for the king to keep them around. So the Manos HaLevi picks up on one of the descriptions, which is that the Jews are scattered and spread out. So the Gemara Megillah understands that Haman was actually, you know, prosecuting the Jews and saying there's no unity amongst the Jews. If they were unified, they'd be living together in harmony. They wouldn't be scattered and spread out. They'd be together. So Haman was saying to Ahasuerus, they're not going to have favor in Hashem's eyes because the Jews are not a unified people. The Jews are a scattered people. The Jews don't have unity. And there are people who can't stand each other. They have to be all across your 127 provinces because there is no unity amongst the Jews. And, you know, honestly, in the last few years, throughout America, Israel, etc., there have been a lot of feelings like that where the Jewish people can't, you know, they say, you ask a Jew a question, you ask two Jews a question, you get three opinions. And sometimes you really feel like that. And Haman was saying to Ahasuerus, this is a people who are disunified, there's no unity amongst them. So we know Haman's successful, he gets this decree passed, Mordechai tears his clothes, he asks Esther to go plead, Esther says, I can't go before the king because I haven't been called for 30 days, everyone knows if you appear before the king unannounced, you'll get killed unless he extends to you his golden scepter. And then Mordechai gives Esther an impassioned speech about how this is her moment to step up, if not, she and her father's house will be lost. And then Esther steps up to the plate. It's Esther's big moment, and she knocks it out of the park. What does Esther do? So if we look at source number 10, but after, and going on to page number 3, after Mordechai's impassioned speech, Esther says, "Vatomer Esther v'lahashiv Mordechai." What does Esther say back? What's her answer to fighting the decree? It's not just pleading to Achashverosh, but rather Lech Kenos Eskol Hayehudim Hanimseim B'Shushan. Go and gather all of the Jews that are found in Shushan. Vitzuma alive, Yaltoklu V'Yaltishtu Shloshet Yamim La'Leviyom. Fast for 3 days. So commentators like to point out, what was Esther doing here? Esther could have fasted. She could have had Mordechai fast. But Esther made a conscious decision, which was, Haman wants to point out our disunity and say, that's the reason we deserve to be destroyed. Let me show you how unified we can be. In a time of crisis, when we need it, I'm going to say, gather all the Jews in Shushan. Again, Shushan was what was available, according to the Gra, in the 3 days. But we're going to gather all the Jews that we can, and we can get them together for a cause. I'm going to fight Haman's claim of disunity by being unified, by being together as Am Yisrael, being together as a Jewish people, and fighting the decree together. And that idea, according to Rav Shlomo Akabetz, is exactly what we're trying to capture and symbolize with Mishloach Manos. So if you look at source number 11, again, he's a little terse when he writes it, but it's more elaborated by the Chasam Sofer, which we'll get back to in a second. For Rav Shlomo Akabetz says, not only did we join together in the time when Esther has the fasting, but to fight all the nations that came against us on the 13th and the 14th, all the Jews gathered together. And by Mishloach Manos, you know what we're saying? Haman wants to say we're disunified. We don't like each other. The Jews can't stand each other. We have so many differences. But no, that is not the story of the Jewish people. We are just going to give things to other people. And why do we give things to other people? It shows love. It shows reis. It shows chiba. It shows connection. So we are saying this, Mishloach Manos is almost the antidote to Haman. Haman says we're disunified. Haman says we can't stand each other. Haman says we hate each other. So let me go give free on Purim when we're able to vanquish Haman. The Lech Knosis Kol Yehudim, where the Jews come together, they all gather in Shushan to fight. Let us give, as a commemoration, gifts to our fellow friend, to our fellow Jew, and say, I love you. You know, it's basically an I love you. We are unified. We're not what Haman says. And even when we have our differences, you know, during times where maybe we are not as unified, we can get together on Purim and say, I'm going to give you Mishloach Manos. Why? Because you're a Jew. Because I love you. You're a brother. You're a sister. We together are one unified people. And this, according to Rav Shlomo Akabetz, is the second perspective on Mishloach Manos. According to the Trumas Hadeshen, Mishloach Manos is preparing and providing your fellow Jew with a meal for Purim. But that's not the perspective according to Rav Shlomo Akabetz. For Rav Shlomo Akabetz, it's about displaying compassion and unity and friendship to your fellow Jew by giving him things on Purim. And that itself is the story and answer and response to Haman. And if we understand that this is the perspective that it underlies Mishloach Manos, we could go back and answer our three questions. Right? Our third question was, the Magen Avraham says, you have a meal and you come to a fellow friend's Purim Suda, and you don't even cook anything. You know, I wouldn't go over so well with my wife. Like, you know, someone came over for a Purim Suda, for the Purim meal, and they didn't even make anything. Right? If they make one, they made a couple dishes, tried, you know, provide, you got to chip in. But let's say you didn't, and you didn't make anything. You just came to the Purim Suda. The Magen Avraham thinks that you actually might fulfill your obligation of Mishloach Manos. And we said for the Trumas Hadeshen, that makes absolutely no sense. But what did you do by coming to the Purim Suda? What type of experience is qualitatively different by that person coming? How does the host feel if they invite you and you come on Purim? You didn't bring food, so maybe they're a little bitter about that, but you came and you accepted their invitation. And that itself is able to give a sense of compassion and friendship and kinship. tapping into exactly what you're supposed to be doing with via the Mishloach Manos. Mishloach Manos are supposed to increase the feelings of love and unity amongst us Jews. So by coming to a Purim festive meal, even though you didn't give anything, you didn't cook anything, you can perhaps fulfill your obligation for this perspective of the Manos Halevi. So that answers question number three. Question number two was, we had the case where, let's say, I go to Bob and I say, here's my Mishloach Manos. And Bob says, I'm good, I don't need it. So we noted the dispute between the Ramah and the Pri Chadash. The Ramah thinks you fulfilled your obligation, and the Pri Chadash thinks that you haven't fulfilled your obligation. And we said the Pri Chadash makes a lot of sense for the Trumas Hadeshin perspective. Namely, you were supposed to provide a meal for your friend, and you didn't, because he didn't accept it. So you have not fulfilled your obligation. You're going to have to give Mishloach Manos again. But according to the Ramah, we asked, how can you fulfill your obligation of Mishloach Manos? You haven't provided anything. But what have you done? What happens if someone comes over to you and says, you know what, you've gone through something hard, maybe someone passed away, or you have a sickness in the family, and someone says, they make an offer, let me buy you dinner. And you say, no, I'm good. I'm really good, I got it covered. But how do you feel after someone like that makes an offer like that to you? You know, you feel good. You see, this person cares about me. This person wants to help me. And you feel a sense of unity and kinship and closeness. So even though the person said no, and Bob said no, he said, I don't need your Mishloach Manos, I'm okay. Not because I don't like you, because I don't need it. But still, the person who tried giving it to Bob, he didn't even give the Mishloach Manos, he is going to have fulfilled his obligation of Mishloach Manos according to the Ramah. Because he was able to display and show and create a sense of unity, a sense of togetherness, a sense of, again, Am Yisrael together. And this will also answer our first question, right? We said that according to the Trumas Hadeshin, you're not able, if it's all about providing a meal for your fellow Jew, for the Purim meal, so then you're not able to send clothes. You're not able to send dresses. You can't send coats. Why? Because that's not food. We don't eat that. So how then did Shlomo HaKalbitz send the new copy of his Sefer to his father-in-law to be a kiss-up? How did he fulfill his obligation of Mishloach Manos? So for this his own perspective that he's going to tell you in the ninth parak of his commentary, it actually makes perfect sense. Because what happens when you send someone a new book that you publish or anything that you've worked on and say, here's a free copy? So that shows you're thinking that person's thinking of you. That person cares about you. You're on their mind. They want to be generous with you. And what does that accomplish? That shows we're together. He loves me. It's something that we feel connected. Again, there's this sense of unity. So I didn't give them food. I didn't give them wine. I provided nothing for their suda. But still, I can fulfill the mitzvah of the Mishloach Manos via sending svarim. Because I'm able to create and display a sense of love, a sense of compassion for my fellow Jew. So just to take a step back for a second, is we have two different perspectives as to what this mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is. On the one hand, Mishloach Manos can be about providing food for your fellow friend for the Purim Suda. And that's the view of the Trumas Hadeshin. And that's why you can't send clothing. And that's why the person needs to actually accept it. And obviously, you can't fulfill Mishloach Manos if the person just visits and doesn't make any food. But we've developed a new perspective. That Haman wanted to tell us, we are not unified. We are not together. We can't stand each other. We despise each other. And we are saying with Mishloach Manos, no. Lech knos es kol Yehudim, go gather all the Jews. All the Jews are together. We might fight. We might squabble. But Mishloach Manos is saying, I love you. That's really what it is I love you and we are together. And therefore, I could fulfill Mishloach Manos by sending a new book that I came out with. I could fulfill Mishloach Manos even if the other person says, I don't need it, I'm good. You know, we joke in my house that you get so much Mishloach Manos, you get all this candy, it's delicious. And the problem is the Pesach's right around the corner. You have to wait a month and you got to get rid of half of it because, you know, you have so much chametz, you have so many things that you need to get rid of. So the guy says, Bob says he doesn't need it, but you still fulfill your obligation. And even if you haven't cooked, you can still fulfill your obligation of Mishloach Manos. And that is our response to the Hamans of the world who say the Jews aren't unified. And I think that this could help explain three ramifications of this dispute between the Trumas Hadeshem and the Manos Halevi. So the Brisker Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik, who was, again, lived in the 1800s and the 1900s, famous for being involved in the Brisker dynasty. So he had an interesting practice. So I referenced the candy a second ago, but if in source number 13, he's quoted that any Mishloach Manos he got, he was very meticulous in examining the contents of the Mishloach Manos. So he'd get a gift from someone, he wouldn't just like throw it into a pile in the kitchen and I'll look at this later, I don't care who it's from. He would take it out, he'd look through it, okay, they sent me a bottle of wine. They sent me a hamantaschen, the type of hamantaschen that I like. We'll leave that to the imagination. Each person has a different flavor that they like. You know, and he went through each item. He was very meticulous in doing so. So why would it be important for the Brisker Rav to think that part of the mitzvah is knowing what the person sent you? So for the Trumas Hadeshen, that it's all just providing for the Suda. So it doesn't matter. Either I have food for the Suda now, or I don't have food for the meal right now. So who cares if the receiver of the gift knows the contents of the gift. However, and this is the way that he's understood by Rav Moshe Sternbach, who is still alive and is living in Har Nof, he's very involved in the Haredi community. So Rav Moshe Sternbach says that it must be the Brisker Rav was trying to be careful to fulfill also the Manos Halevi's idea. Namely, the Manos Halevi thinks that Mishloach Manos is about instilling a sense of love and friendship and kinship. So you know what really sounds, I don't know if anyone here has gotten like a really nice Mishloach Manos. You know, sometimes my family received a really nice set of Mishloach Manos and you're like, wow. They probably put lots of time, lots of effort, and personalized it, and the contents, they spent a lot of money. And how does that make you feel? Like, wow, that person really cares about me. That person is unified with me. And you feel like very close to that person. And what the Brisker Rav was trying to accomplish was to fulfill Mishloach Manos to its max. Namely, if I know what this person sent me and that person sent me, and I'm able to think about that and appreciate it, that will be able to generate those feelings of love, those feelings of unity in a way that if I just like, you know, I look at the end of the day, you know, so this is a good idea behind when I was kids, we used to get a lot of Mishloach Manos. My mom's in education. So a lot of people used to send us Mishloach Manos. And there was like a big competition and fight over, we'd run to the Mishloach Manos, see what's in this one, what's in that one. So I know you get this candy, you get that chocolate, I get this drink, you get that drink. And it was like a big fight, you know, so who gets what? But the idea is maybe it's less about the content and the taste of the food that's being sent, but perhaps what everyone's really trying to do is to appreciate that this person, wow, he sent me such good Mishloach Manos. And you're really saying, you know, Haman, we're not only going to boo you on Megillah night, but we're going to send great Mishloach Manos and appreciate and have a sense of gratitude towards those other people who sent us such great Mishloach Manos. So that's ramification idea number one. Namely, knowing the contents of Mishloach Manos might increase the sense of unity, but does not make sense regarding providing a fellow Jew with a meal for prayer. A second ramification is based on the tshuva of the Ksav Sofer, again, who was the son of the Ksav Sofer, who we referenced earlier, again in the 1800s, who has an interesting case. He says, let's say, you know, it's you drop off a Mishloach Manos, happens all the time. You know, someone's not home. And what do you do if someone's not home and you drop off Mishloach Manos? Sometimes you say, I need to save my Mishloach Manos. Other times, you just leave it at the door. But not everyone is so great at, you know, leaving their name on the Mishloach Manos. And you're like, who gave this to me? And like, I've had this where someone dropped off Mishloach Manos. I didn't realize who it was. And then I later went to their house to bring the Mishloach Manos. And like, I already came to your house. Like, so then why didn't you write your name on it? And then I would know not to come back to you. But has that person who the receiver does not know who sent the Mishloach Manos, has that sender fulfilled his obligation? So the Ksav Sofer says that it depends from which perspective. Right? According to the Trumas Hadashen, what is the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos? It's to provide food for your fellow Jew for their Purim meal. So even if the Mishloach Manos are anonymous, have you provided the food? As long as there's food in it. Yes, you have provided the food, and therefore, for the Trumas Hadashen, you have actually fulfilled your obligation. But according to Rav Shlomo Kalbitz, the Manos Halevi, if the whole idea is to show a sense of unity and togetherness and to instill feelings of friendship and kinship, have you accomplished that by giving an anonymous gift? So maybe yes, that maybe someone out there is giving a gift. But he wants to argue that Ksav Sofer says that no, you have not accomplished that because he doesn't even know who you are. For all you know, you just got the wrong address. So he chalks it up to a mistake, right? So he says that it really is going to depend from which perspective. For the Trumas Hadashen, an anonymous Mishloach Manos will be Yotzei. But according to the Manos Halevi, it will not be Yotzei. So that is ramification number two, an anonymous Mishloach Manos. One more ramification, which I think is a little more interesting and more modern question, is can you fulfill Mishloach Manos via sending someone a gift card? Can I send a gift card, like an Amazon gift card, for Mishloach Manos? So we'll start the opposite way than we've been analyzing in a second. So according to the Manos Halevi, you know, anyone who's gotten an Amazon gift card before feels pretty good, right? It's thoughtful. It's a common thing that workplaces will show their appreciation for their employees by giving some type of gift card, Starbucks gift card, etc. So does it increase feelings of friendship and companionship? Yes. So according to the Manos Halevi, it would seem that you would for sure be Yotzei. But what about for the Trumas Hadashen? So that's a little bit more complicated. As face value, you might argue, is an Amazon gift card food? Is a Starbucks gift card food? No. So have I provided for food for my fellow Jews suited per meal? At face value, not. However, there are those poskim, including the Shut Hilchos Ketanos, which again is we'll leave aside to exactly is for a second, who think that as even according to the Trumas Hadashen, as long as the item that you give can easily be transferred for food, so then you will fulfill your obligation. So I could take a gift card, a Starbucks gift card, and get Starbucks and, you know, be Yotzei my obligation. Because I actually did this when I was in college. The way I do Mishloach Manos, it's a little bit harder. You don't. Everyone's in their apartments. Everyone's on their own schedule. So I would always be careful. I'd go with my best friend to gather Dunkin' Donuts. And we'd buy each other breakfast. I'd get him a coffee and a bagel. He'd buy me a coffee and a bagel. And we'd sit and have breakfast together on Purim morning. But let's say I use the Dunkin' Donuts gift card. So it's very easy to take that Dunkin' Donuts gift card, go and pay at the meal the same way you would take some money and provide it. So even maybe according to the Trumas Hadashen, you'll have fulfilled your obligation. So just to review, we had three questions and which ended up causing us to have two different perspectives on the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. Right, our three questions was, can you fulfill Mishloach Manos via clothes or sefer? Number two, can you fulfill Mishloach Manos if the other person says he doesn't need it? Number three, can you fulfill Mishloach Manos even if you came to a suda, a meal, and you didn't make anything? And we said that those are going to be subject to dispute between the Trumas Hadashen, who thinks that the mitzvah is to provide food for your fellow Jew for the Suda, and therefore you can't send clothes. And if the person says no, you haven't provided food, therefore you won't fulfill your obligation. You have to give it again. And number three, if you come to a meal and you didn't make anything, obviously you haven't fulfilled your obligation. However, we argue that really there's a second perspective, which is the perspective of Shlomo Al-Kalbitz, the Manos Halevi, who's going to argue that no, Mitzvah Mishloach Manos is our response to Haman, response of Haman's, you know, claims of disunity and showing we are united. Lech Knosses Kol Yehudim, all the Jews are together, and we are going to show and display our feelings of unity and love and friendship. And therefore, you could send a sefer because that shows love, and you're going to be, even if the person says he doesn't need it, you have already displayed your friendship. And even just by coming to somebody else's Purim meal, perhaps you're going to fulfill your obligation. And three more ramifications we said of this idea was we noted the practice of the Briska Rav that he'd always check the contents, seemingly to be strict for the Manos Halevi, that he wanted to know who's sending me what so that I could fully appreciate the sincerity and the generousness of the person sending me the gifts. perspective, ramification number two, which is the Ksav Sofer, anonymous Shalach Manos, you don't know who sent it. So according to the Trumas Hadashim, you still provided the food and you'll still be Yotzei. Versus the Manos Halevi, who thinks that, no, you haven't really instilled unity and friendship if he doesn't know who sent it. He might just think it's a mistake. And finally, perspective number three, which we said maybe using a gift card to as Mishalach Manos. And we noted for Manos Halevi, that's obviously going to instill friendship. And number two is for the Trumas Hadeshen, maybe you wouldn't be Yotzei, but perhaps you'd still be Yotzei because you could use the gift card to buy food. Maybe if it was a Dick's Sporting Goods gift card, maybe it wouldn't be the same according to that perspective, because it's not so easy to change the Dick's Sporting Goods for food. And I think that this, just to end and conclude, that I think this Manos Halevi is such an important message for us as Jews now. You know, we have Jews scattered across the world with the situation going on in the world. Anti-Semitism is you know, makes us feel more alone and more isolated. And it's important to remember that, you know, this isn't the first time we feel separated and that we don't always feel the connection. And sometimes situations like this, of war, situations of turmoil, situations like Haman, who come against us and tell us, you know, that we're a scattered nation. So nothing brings people together like a Haman. And to be able to have our Lake Kenos moment and to be able to use Purim as a day of loving each other, of showing unity to each other, of showing togetherness and showing Haman, we're not a scattered people. We are unified and we are going to send gifts to our friends just because we care about each other. And, you know, we're Am Yisrael. We're people who care about each other. We're brothers and sisters. And we are going to show that by sending Mishloach Manos to our fellow Jews.